everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another New Comics Wednesday episode. I'm joined by fellow contributors, Jay Bradshaw and Manny Gomez. And we're going to talk about a few of the books that are hitting your stands today as we're releasing this episode. So spoiler free, we're just going to talk about the books in very general terms so you get a chance to read them for yourselves. So we'll kick it off with Jay. He hasn't been on the show in a while other than coming back for Marvel Monday recently, but we're hoping to have a lot more of him going forward. So Jay, why don't you kick it off? Tell us the first book you're going to talk about.
Hey, how's it going? Okay, I guess I'll talk about Big Girls. I actually collect that myself, so it was kind of nice to kind of get like a free peek at the number six, because it was a six-issue limited series, and it's done by Jason Howard. He does artwork and the story, and I always did like his artwork and his stories, so I was kind of excited to get the series when it came out.
I have no idea about this book when you were asking. Like, you're like, oh, Big Girls 6, I'll do that. I have no clue. What's the story about?
Oh, it's supposed to be in the future where there's like a mutation. So people get big, like all the girls become giants and the men are reversed. They actually become mutated and they're like hideous creatures and they're mindless beasts that just want to like kill everybody. So pretty much everybody is in a place called the Preserve, and to protect the Preserve, they find three women that are giants to protect the Preserve from these creatures. But as you go into the story, like that past five issues, they talk about how the Marshall was actually dating the head scientist. They had a child that turned into a creature. It was a male, and he, you know, took care of that kid, and it was like a big old fight between them two. So I don't want to spoil it. I got to be careful how I word all this, but. It's pretty good. There's a bunch of fight scenes, and the last panel, number five, I know this for sure, they show that they reactivate the machine that's actually in the cell, the main place where the Marshall's at, that his wife had before she died in the fifth issue. So there's another guy that was helping him out, but they in the first issue they show him coming to his house. He's another scientist, and his son is actually one of those creatures, so they kill him off because they don't want them to grow up to be, you know, destroy the, you know, that their place that they're protected. And his name is Martin. And the three main characters in the book are Devin at Apex and Amber. Amber's a redhead. She's like the main big girl. And these creatures are called Jax, and that's what they're trying to keep out of this area. So in the end of the fifth one, Martin turns the system on, but the Marshall stops him and it blows up in their face. Well, they actually turn to giant men without the mutations. So that's what leads off into the fifth one, is like a big battle between the giants.
So did it end the way you thought it was going to?
Yeah. I think if you read a lot of these stories, you kind of figure out, okay, they're going to go this route, and it kind of ends up the way you expected to go. It was still a fun read. And like I said, I do like his artwork and his writing. So I was kind of happy to get it.
Right on. Sounds interesting. I don't know if that it doesn't, I don't know. It sounds a little bit too weird for me, but,
well, that's just the way Josh Howard is, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, if that sounds like something that might be up your alley, listeners, be sure to go ahead and check it out. All right, Manny, what do you have up for your first book?
For my first book, I'm going to go ahead and start with American Vampire 1976, number 4, by Scott Snyder, with art by Rafael Albuquerque, colors by Dave McKay. This issue is more like a transitional issue to a bigger moment in the overall story. So there's not that much necessarily in it other than kind of the build-up to what's going to probably happen in issue 5, although it does reveal a couple of clues of things going on. But the cool thing is that the VMS is reunited, and that's what the issue really is them on a journey on a plane to an area where they going to try and find something to be able to take down the beast. And because there's this pact between the American founding fathers and then an ancient council of monsters. And so Skinner, Pearl, Book, Felicia, Travis, and Cal, they're all on their way and they're trying to figure this out. At the same time, we see some really fishy stuff going on with the president, and a very interesting couple of panels. So it was funny because issue one of this series, I was not impressed with it. I know what was going on, but now by issue four, I'm in it. I'm invested in Skinner and his story. And then there's certain moments in the book so far that have given me give moments where you have to go back and read the original one, and I haven't yet. So I look forward to doing that. This is just typical Raphael Albuquerque art, and it's good. It's decent. I don't like kind of the shadow like colors sometimes that you use, but I guess with vampire that should be okay. It fits this book. I'm not sure if it would work on other books that very well. Maybe on a Western kind of title that would also work. But it's not the most exciting issue, but I think it's leading into something bigger.
So do you feel like do you feel like it's going to wrap up in a satisfying way, or is it easier for you because you only jumped on with this series, you didn't read the previous two?
I don't know. I'm not aware of how long this run is supposed to be, but it, you know, it set up so many things and then brought back so many things from the past that I do think it still needs a couple of more months to go in order to really have a satisfactory wrap up with everything that's happened so far in just four issues.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's supposed to be six, so I think you will get two more. But I was kind of surprised when this book started coming out that it wasn't more pages each month. It's only like a 24-page book, so. All right, well, let me talk about my first title. It's from Aftershock, Red Atlantis, from writer Stephanie Phillips, who, man, she's just been killing it lately. Art is by Robert Carey. Colors are by Roche. We have Troy Pateri on letters. And then, you know, of course, the story, like I've talked about before, there's a couple of other people that contributed to it. Jan and Victoria Newman and Nicholas Leeds, because they were real KGB agents back in the day in Russia. So this book is super topical with Russia and election interference and all that kind of thing. And, you know, Manny and I have talked about a lot of books lately that have been topical, and we've talked about how they're sort of you sort of get tired after a while of seeing these books and being reminded of the craziness that's going on in the world with elections and people storming the Capitol and conspiracies and just the kind of intolerance that's out there. And even things like Detective Comics with, you know, No Mask and stuff. It's just, it's like, I just want to escape all that and read my comics and have it be sort of a getaway. So here's the thing about Red Atlantis and Stephanie Phillips. She takes the idea, you know, of interference in election or whatever, but that's it. It's just that idea, as opposed to, you know, Department of Truth, which takes it all. You know, it's like the most relevant comic I've ever read in my life. And in that way, it's good, but in that way, it's also bad because it's not an escape. But what Stephanie's building here, along with Robert Carey as an artist, is really an escape, because this is just a straight up action book. You know, it's that first idea of, you know, Russia trying to interfere with our elections, but that's it. It's just that idea. And then from there, she just starts spinning this crazy tale. Obviously inspired by, you know, Jan and Victoria Newman and what their initial story was, and starts talking about, you know, this secret cabal that's trying to hang on to a weapon that Russia built in the Cold War that allowed people to do things with their minds and maybe control certain aspects of other people's minds, or, you know, be able to move things with their minds and do that sort of thing. And I mentioned before when I talked in depth about the first issue during our 12 Days of the Comic Source about how the first issue, the plot sort of reminds me of Kingsman, where, you know, the phone started emitting this beep and people kind of go crazy. That's sort of what happens in the first issue. And then in the second issue, we meet the main character, and all of a sudden we realize that she's not who she necessarily thinks she is. And, you know, Miriam Roberts is what she thinks her name is. Turns out her parents were, you know, scientists from Russia, and she was sort of their last great experiment, like what they did to sort of hide their research and try to make sure that, you know, she escaped to the US and could have a normal life, because the Cold War was ending and there was no use for these sort of weapons, and they didn't want to see their work weaponized by the Soviet Union. And then, you know, Soviet Union fell, and now it's Russia, and there are still, you know, underground movements and kind of black bag sort of conspiracy type organizations in Russia that still want to strike out at the US. So that's what's great about it. Like, it started off with something relevant, but then it went completely a different direction. This is all action movie. It's all, you know, like, it kind of reminds me of the Terminator in that way, right? Like, her parents, Miriam's parents, had set up a friend of theirs, a trusted friend who, it, you know, was very well trained to do this sort of thing, to kind of watch their daughter from afar and make sure she was protected. And he doesn't show himself until all of a sudden the events of the first issue happen and people are going crazy on November 3rd, the most recent election day. And, you know, the FBI somehow traces it to Miriam's apartment, and they show up, and then this Russian, former Russian agent shows up to kind of rescue her, and now they're on the run, right? So very much kind of in that Terminator feel, where they're strangers, you know, Miriam doesn't trust him, and you know, whereas he knows everything about her, you know. So again, very, very Terminator like and it's just fun. It's just really fun. The art from Robert Carey is it's a little gritty. The line work and such is not quite as clean as I normally like, but it suits the story, because it is really fast paced and really, really action packed. So, again, I think Stephanie Phillips is doing a great job. She's just, yeah, her star is on the rise for sure. So I definitely recommend Red Atlantis if you guys like high octane, action stories with a little bit of, political intrigue. It's definitely not a super political book, by any means. Like I said, it's just the kind of the spark that sets it off. And then after that, it's just kind of like all out action. So, all right, Jay, what do you have up for your next book?
For me, I'll do Haha. And I think Manny wanted to do this too. So I'm sorry, Manny, if you were going to do this one. I didn't mean to steal it from you.
I'm sure he'll have things to add.
No, it's fine. There's always a lot more books to cover.
Okay. That's by Maxwell Prince. Art is by Vanessa Del Rey. From what I did the research on, I guess they're doing each book is just going to be like a one shot. It's going to be like one story, it's like a dark humor. So it pretty much starts with this preview is out there. So it's pretty much a clown that's he's like works at a circus, and no matter how you read the story, so everything goes bad. Like, he's got a bad marriage, everything's just starting to fall apart. But he's always so positive, always smiling, always trying to be, you know, happy-go-lucky about everything, even though everything just seems to go, you know, left for this poor guy. And finally, kind of, he doesn't really snap, I guess you can say, but it kind of goes that way. And it's like I said, just a one-shot story. And I guess the next one's gonna be a different character. I'm assuming. I'm not really too sure on that one, but it just seems like it's just gonna be I guess dark humor, I guess, is what they're going for with the series. But it was pretty good. The artwork was great. The story was pretty funny. But I don't want to give too much of the plot away, because it's worth talking about, but I don't want to do that either. But like I say, it's just the way the world just beats you up and tears you down. But this guy still is positive about everything. I mean, everything goes bad for this guy. I mean, his family, I mean, his job, I mean, everything. But he still just manages to, you know, keep that positivity till the end, where, you know, just kind of had a little bit of too much, but it's good. I think you'll really like it. I think people who like the dark humor would totally enjoy this book. And if this is just a glimpse of what they're going to keep doing down the road, I would definitely just keep reading them.
Did you check it out, Manny? I know you're a big fan of.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Well, Maxwell Prince. He's the messed up mind behind all of the ice cream books from Image. Sorry. Haha was fantastic. I really like the dark humor, and then Vanessa Del Rey's art really helps because just kind of that, those lines that she draws that aren't necessarily very crisp really go along with the dark tale that they're telling. It's kind of Joker-esque as far as like a Joaquin Phoenix Joker-esque when it comes to just a clown out of his luck, down on his luck with everything going on. And so it just seems like as the story goes on, Prince just kind of turns it up a little bit more, and then he's able to kind of overcome it and laugh through it and then turn it up a little bit more to the point where it almost turns like psychotic and you're trying to figure out what's going to be the next move for him. And then, so for a one shot, it moves really, really quickly, which I appreciated. And it's going to be interesting to see if he just uses that clown persona for like another character, but it's a different type of clown in a different situation, because we saw him in Ice Cream Man kind of use that same model, but then different themes. That's one of the things I've talked about before that I really, really liked. So I wonder if maybe what the next clown is going to be up against. But you know, with Prince, it can go any direction. I mean, we've seen books in different languages. We've seen books with like almost no words in them, and just really, really good stuff. From the moment I had seen this in the back, teased in the back of another Ice Cream Man book, I knew that this was going to be good. The cover is just creepy as heck. Love the cover.
And, the variant's pretty good too, though. The variant cover is pretty cool.
I did not see the variant.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I gotta check it out.
I mean, that's what I was kind of wondering. So, I mean, we know in the Ice Cream Man book, which has obviously been a runaway hit, it's that Ice Cream Man is the thread, right? That runs through it all. He's kind of like the narrator, if you will, or you know, whatever you want to call him. The thing that they all have in common. It sounds like in Haha, it's not going to be some like this clown that we meet in the first issue. He's not going to be playing the role of the Ice Cream Man. He's not going to be in every issue kind of narrating. We're just going to get a one shot about a clown with a crazy weird story. And then the next issue, it's going to be a story about a different clown that's crazy and creepy and weird. So, I mean, how many crazy clown stories can you tell? I guess that's the question.
I think Prince, I'll give him credit to say he's got quite a few up his sleeve if he has a comic book series. But you know, what is good is that he does it with one particular theme for the entire issue, and he's really got sticking with it and expanding on it. But it's just that he wraps it up nicely in the book, and I really appreciate that. And it's something he also does in Ice Cream Man, which every book is very, very specific. And he wraps it up nicely, so you don't have to worry about the next issue or something like that. You're just looking forward to another, well, flavor of ice cream. In this place, we're going to get different clowns. I love it.
Yeah, like you said, it was just very fast paced. And then when I was done with it, I'm like, that's it. I was expecting more, but I was like, I got to wait for the next one now. Oh, man, bummer.
All right, Manny, what do you have up next for your second title?
Oh, shoot, my turn. I have Future State Justice League number one.
Yeah, and before you start, just to remind everybody, we are doing the Future State Fridays where we go full spoiler. Obviously, we're not going spoilers on this. So coming up in just a couple days, we'll have Future State for the first week. So that's 10 days after the titles hit stands. We'll be breaking them down title by title, full spoilers. So no excuse for you not to join us and listen, because you better have read it 10 days after. So that means next Friday, you know, as you're listening to this, a full whatever it is, 10 or 11 days from now, we'll be covering the books that that came out this last Tuesday. So, all right, go ahead, Manny.
Yeah, so this one's written by Joshua Williamson with pencils by Robson Rocha, inks by Daniel Henriquez. That's just a funny way to do it. Romulo Fajardo on Junior on Colors. And Dan Mora did the regular cover for it. So this is what was really interesting about Justice League, is what I was really curious about, is that technically this was going to be, correct me if I'm wrong, the 5G team, right? This was going to be our Justice League. Like, speculate maybe. And although I like some of the characters, I'm glad it's not. It's just too different for me as far as the, you know, the Justice League we all know and love. This Future State Justice League team consists of John Kent, Tim Superman, obviously, Tim Fox as Batman, Yara Flora as Wonder Woman, Joe Mullian as
Green Lantern.
Thank you. Andy Curry as Aqua Woman. Yep.
Aquaman, yeah.
And then Josh Chambers as some new Flash. So, like, it starts with the premise that they've been working together, but that's it. It's just work only, because of the fact that the Justice League has, after several things, they decided to no longer share their identities. They would continue to work together as as a masked vigilantes together, I guess, whatever you want to call them. And then, so they're continuing this, and now they're back to the old Justice League headquarters, the Hall of Justice, because there was a Legion of Doom group that had got together. Fortunately, somebody killed them all before any of them got there. So it's about that mystery. Starts that off, and we get to see that a lot of the members of the team, they're not very well acquainted with each other because of the fact that they don't really even know who they are. Some of the ones who did have their parents be part of the Justice League say, yeah, I remember we used to go to Clark's house and have dinner with them, and we used to do this, and they used to bring me around here, and blah blah blah. And so there's a clash of ideology as far as how they should function as a team, which that on its own is actually pretty interesting. I don't know, maybe it's because it just didn't really enjoy it very much. But I mean, I like the characters individually, but as a team, it just didn't seem to come together very well. And then with the storyline that they're telling, they may not be coming together very well. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into it too much here, because like I said, we'll be talking about it in depth in our Future State Friday week 2. But I think that's kind of the point, right? I mean, the thing that makes the Justice League so great is not only do they work together as teammates, but they're also friends, you know, like the relationship between Batman and Wonder Woman is special. The relationship between Wonder Woman and Superman is special. The relationship between Batman and Superman, you know, world's finest. And that's what makes it all tick. And here we have a bunch of characters who by choice, because something bad happened in the past, because they each knew each other's identities, they've chosen to purposely not know each other's identities. And in a way, a little bit, it reminds me of Age of X-Men, where they're all supposed to be their own sort of individual islands. And we know how well that worked in that sort of fascist kingdom of X-Men. And we see the same thing happening here with Andy Curry and Jess, who's this non-binary Flash, who I think is probably my favorite of the members, maybe just because I know so little about them, and they're sort of mysterious, and I don't know, I think their costume looks cool and whatever. So anyway, they're kind of defying the rules and spending time together, and so it already isn't working. And so I think the point is that it's supposed to feel like they're operating at something less than their peak efficiency, because they are denying themselves those relationships, but I do. The problem that I have with the book is this problem that I have with all the books. It feels rushed. It feels overcrowded, and the artwork feels like less than I expect from these artists. You know, I've seen almost every single artist on Future State. I've seen them do better work on other books. So I can't help but think that every book was rushed, because I mean, Robson Roach's art usually looks a lot better than this, looks a lot more polished, and here it just is kind of meh. Did you have a chance to read it, Jay? You have anything to add?
I didn't like it.
All right. That's enough said.
I don't know. I just feel like they're forcing this whole new genre, you know, of books toward the fans. But I don't know. I'm not feeling the vibe.
All right. Fair enough. Well, let me move on to my second book. I'm going to talk about a Future State book as well. It's Green Lanterns by writer Jeffrey Thorne. Tom Rainey handles the art in the main story, Mike Atea on colors, and World Design on letters. You know, I could just say ditto as far as the artwork is concerned. This is not Tom Rainey's best work, but I will say that his typical very good action scenes and wonderful page layouts are present, but his line work to me just looks rushed. And I feel like when artists are rushing, the mistakes they make are in perspective and line work and such. And those are the problems that I see here. There are times where I feel like John Stewart's head is nearly as like, it's the same size as his leg from like his hip to his knee. Nobody's head is that big. Nobody's head is as long as their entire thigh, but yet sometimes some of these panels, that's what it seems like. But for the most part, the storytelling is good, and you know, it's a lot of action, and clearly he did, you know, if anybody needed to be rushed, it was probably him, because he's drawing more figures than anybody else that I've seen. So the story itself, you know, again, I don't want to spoil too much, but what we do know, the lanterns have lost their rings, and they haven't had them for decades. And so they're still out there trying to protect planets and police the galaxy. And obviously that's a huge challenge when you don't have the greatest weapon in the universe, as the Green Lantern rings are often referred to as. But it does give John Stewart a chance to lead and kind of show off and showcase his Marine training, which he had long before he had the ring. So it's an okay story, not great. I kind of question whether humans led, well, and they're not all human, some of them are other, you know, species of lanterns, but I question whether it's realistic that these lanterns all of a sudden without their rings could stand up to other warlike races in the galaxy. I feel like they would be overrun pretty quickly, but we'll see how it all plays out in the second issue. But the reason that I wanted to mention this book specifically and on this, rather than waiting to talk about it more in depth on our Future State Friday, is all because of the second story. And it stars Maddie's favorite Green Lantern, Jessica Cruz. And just like the rest of the lanterns in the first story, she doesn't have a ring either. So she is quote unquote powerless. But you know who still has their rings? All the yellow lanterns, they still have their rings, and they are going to take over a space station, basically in space sector 0123, that is where the Green Lantern were using it as kind of a home base. And the space station is actually looks like it's in the shape of a giant lantern. And so it's up to Jessica Cruz, with no powers whatsoever, to fight off yellow lanterns that still have their rings. And, you know, Jessica still deals with the anxiety and the agoraphobia. And now she doesn't have her ring or powers to help her. And how can she take out three yellow lanterns? Or can she take out three yellow lanterns on its own? So I feel like the creative team here really gets who Jessica Cruz is and what makes Jessica Cruz such a great lantern. And we get a really cool twist at the end that I won't get into here because I don't want to spoil it. But I mean, Jessica, I wouldn't say she's my favorite Lantern, but she's one that the more I read about her and have read about her from, you know, I liked her right from the start, more than Simon Boz, when Geoff Johns created her. And, you know, then in the New Guardian series, especially with the work Sam Humphries did, you know, liked her more and more. And so I expected to really like this story, especially based on the creative team, and they did not let me down. And Jessica, she just keeps climbing that ladder where she might be like number three on my list of Lanterns now. It's probably like Hal Jordan, Saint Walker, and then Jessica Cruz. Like she's awesome. So Ryan Caddy, who's a friend of the show and Manny and I both know personally, he's the writer on it. And I think he did an incredible job. It's very clear he understands who Jessica Cruz is. Sami Basri did the art, and the art's excellent. Does a great job of showing the emotion on Jessica's face, and the action scenes are really cool. We have Hi-Fi on colors and Dave Sharp on letters. And there is a third story as well, starring Guy Gardner, which is, it's kind of fun. It's kind of humorous because it's a Guy Gardner story, but at the same time, it's sort of poignant in a way. It's by Ernie Altbacher, who I never had heard of before, but he's the writer. Clayton Henry does the art. Marcelo Maiello, who is an incredible colorist, he's been my colorist of the year before, and he handles the colors, and then Steve Wands does letters. And basically, Guy Gardner goes to this planet called Rarlin, and he's supposed to be retrieving this like piece of space debris that fell to the planet. And there's two different species on the planet, and they're constantly at war with each other, and they can't ever agree on anything. And so they're arguing over this piece of space trash, basically, that falls to the Earth. And some of them say that it's a relic, and some say and an artifact and holy, and the others are like, no, it's just trash. And so they're kind of fighting over it, you know, who should control it or what have you. And Guy Gardner's like, you people are so dumb. This is just a piece of trash, and you're fighting over it. So I declare this dumbass war over. It's basically, you know, the very Guy Gardner thing to do. But then he's there right when his the ring stopped working, you know, whatever caused that to happen. And then he's stranded there. And he's stranded there for a long time, a really long time. So it's basically the story of what happens when Guy Gardner's stuck on a planet and doesn't have any powers. Can he survive? Can he still get these races that are at war to get along? Well, I guess we'll see. And then there's a surprise appearance of another DC character at the end of the story that kind of throws everything into chaos all over again. So yeah, really great story. By far my least favorite was the Jeffrey Thorne one. It has me worried about the Green Lantern title once Infinite Frontier starts. I mean, we were already worried based on the comments that Jeffrey Thorne has made about Hal Jordan in the past. So this issue, unfortunately, didn't assuage any of my fears anyway. So either one of you guys have anything to say about Green Lantern? Man, you must have something to say about the Jessica Cruz story at least.
I haven't even looked at that one yet.
Oh, I'm shocked. All good though. Jay, did you check it out?
No, I didn't have time yet.
All good.
But you got me intrigued, so I gotta look at it.
I'm looking. I'm gonna be looking at it in the next
as soon as we're done recording, basically.
Yeah. Because I'm a huge Green Lantern fan, so I was kind of worried we were gonna destroy it because the movies didn't do it any justice.
All right, Jay. Well, you're up next. What do you have for your third book?
I guess I'll continue the thing we're doing. I guess Future State, Robin, Eternal. Written by Megan Fitzmartin and pencils by Eddie Barrows. So full disclosure, I don't read or collect any kind of Robin stories whatsoever because I'm a main Batman guy. But this was actually really good. So far with all the Future stories, I'm not too thrilled about it. But with the Robin, it was pretty easy to kind of pick up on it because, you know, the main Robin now is Tim. Because I guess you got to do a little backtracking, I guess, with the Full Metal, the Death Metal. You got to read that to kind of go into this storyline. It seems like it.
Well, so that's what's so weird about all these future state books. So they don't have anything to do with anything, and they're just throwing them out there. We're all thrown in the middle of the story. We're all lost. And it doesn't actually have anything to do with death metal. So
that's
so
weird. Yeah, I was just trying to figure out, is it connected to that? Is it connected to We Are Robin? I mean, the only character that was on there was character Darcy. And I only remember her from We Are Robin. That was like a miniseries. I was like, okay, I know who she is. And I guess she's more important in this storyline. But I guess that's the future, and he's the main Robin, and he's fighting pretty much the corrupt system of Gotham. One of the Robins betrayed him. The other one's locked up, and we get a surprise visit from Spoiler. I guess she kind of hung up the cape and said, I'm done with it, but he needs help, so she shows up and helps him. There's a new drug in the market. I won't say where it's from because I don't want to spoil it, but that's what he's trying to do. So he has to stop these, they're called Cybers, if I remember right. From becoming, super powerful. So that's the whole premise, is he's, getting a team together to go stop a shipment of stuff coming in, that's going to hurt the city. And the artwork was actually pretty good. I was happy with it. And like I said, I'm not a huge Robin fan, but the story was good. And I was kind of sad when it was over. I was like, oh, that's it. That's like, because it was actually really good. The ending is a little surprise. I guess they're doing that with all of the series, but I won't give it away, but it's pretty cool the way it ends.
Did you check this one out, Manny?
No, not yet.
Yeah, so
I may not actually.
this is the perfect example of what I'm talking about, where here we have an absolutely incredible artist, Eddie Barrows, working with his normal inker, Ibar Ferreira, and his normal colorist, Adriana Lucas, and the art is just not as good as you expect Eddie Barrows' art to be. That's not to say the art is bad.
No, it's not too terrible.
The art is still way above average. But when I look at things like Nightwing or certainly Freedom Fighters, which is, I think, the best work Eddie Barrows has ever done, that stuff's just leaps and bounds above this. And I don't understand. Like, when I started, I'm like, Eddie Barrows, okay, it won't be too bad. And then I started going through it, and I had to go back and look at the credits again, because I'm like, does he have a different inker or different colors or something? Why does it not look as polished and as good as it normally does? And the only thing I can come up with is because Future State, I don't know. The story itself, I will kind of agree with Jay. It's easier to jump onto the story. Everything is here that we need, as opposed to some others where even after you finish the issue, you still feel lost. It's another creator that I'm not familiar with any of their work, Megan Fitzmartin. So, but we only get one more. I mean, we all know we're only getting one more issue. So everything here, which she's kind of established a pretty big scope of a story, it's all going to, maybe the first issue doesn't feel as crammed for hers, but I'm worried the second issue is going to feel cramped. As opposed to a lot of the other titles, it might be the first issue feels cramped because we're getting all the information there, and the second issue may flow a little better. Can Megan keep up the feel of good pacing in the second issue and still wrap up everything to a satisfactory level in the second issue of Robin Eternal? That's my question.
Yeah, I agree. I like it's easier because you know the characters already. I don't think I would like to read the Justice League one because I just I don't like new characters. I like what I got,
Yeah, what do you have up next, Manny?
Well, continuing the theme of lost and crammed, I have Future State Teen Titans number one. Jesus Christ, that book is a mess. written by Tim Sheridan, with Rafa Sandoval on pencils and Jordi Tarragona on inks and Alejandro Sanchez on colors. The arc is called Ruins, and it starts with Nightwing. And I put that in quotation marks because for whatever reason, he doesn't like to be called Nightwing. I'm not going to tell you why. He is returning to the Teen Towers, I guess, or that's what it's called, right? That's what it is. Anyway, Titan Tower to.
I think it was Titan's Tower, but then, we've been hearing these rumors about them starting a school. So I think it's like the Teen Titans Academy, but it's
a Teen Titans headquarters
in
New York City to pick something
where their school was.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to be real. I'm having real hard trouble describing the issue, even as a as a general, because like there's so many things going on, from a merged Beast Boy and Cyborg called Cybeast, and you see Raven training mentally with somebody else, and then there's a lack of leadership between some of the new Titans. You see a couple of flashbacks where everyone's at that school that you're talking about, and then you see a very grouchy Nightwing who doesn't want to be called Nightwing, who also doesn't want to be called Richard or Dick, and so you're trying to figure out who is who. And then also you have a bunch of new characters, what do they have? A guy that's like the Chupacabras, that's what they call him, Gorilla Greg, totally tubular, Brat Girl, who is kind of dressed like Batgirl but not, and they're all being quote unquote led by Starfire, and apparently there's a Shazam team out somewhere, a field team doing something, and yeah, I can't, like, there's a lot of what's going on, they're doing what, and then even when it wraps up, you're like, wait, what just happened? Wait, he's who? He's what? What's going on? And I think we're expected to have one more of these and figure out what the hell happened here. Like this is like a 6 or 12 issue series that got crammed into one or two issues, and it is just a total mess. I will say I'm very happy with the fact that I get a couple of panels of Bunker, because I think it's pretty cool. Other than that, it's just a complete mess, and kind of like what you guys were talking about with the books you guys are covering, Robin, and the story just come out of nowhere. There's no precedent. Like we just left Dark Knight, Dark Metal, and then some things have happened, and like even in Justice League, that takes place after the Magistrate was in Gotham City, because it mentions it in a very, very vaguely. And then so here you having Nightwing against the four Riders, and I'm like, I don't know what is going on. And so yeah, it's a Teen Titans is a mess.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the risk you take when you do these time jumps, and then we're dropped in the middle of the story, but there's ways to do it where it works, and you can kind of pick up contextually what's gone on. But I agree with Manny. Like, this is one of those where, and I talked about this, and you'll hear me talk about it on the episode we already recorded, because, you know, timey wimey. But I talked about it when we recorded the Future State week one, which I've already heard because I already recorded it, like I said, but it doesn't come out till a couple more days. But you'll hear me say this over and over in there. It's like, okay, these creators had an idea for what they wanted to do for 5G, and they thought they had, you know, that was the new status quo for DC, and they had God knows how many issues to tell the stories, and they may have had multiple storylines in their head. I'm going to do this 5-issue story arc, and then I have the next 5-issue story arc planned out, and the next 5-issue story arc planned out after that. Then they're told, okay, no more 5G. Stop working on 5G. Then they're told, no, we're going to take the work that's already been done on 5G, and we're going to do 2 issues. So whatever you can squeeze in 2 issues, and all of a sudden they're taking God knows how many story, you know, 2-3 story arcs, and trying to cram everything they can into 2 issues, or it could just be one, maybe 1 5-issue story arc. 5 issues is a hell of a lot less than, or a hell of a lot more than 2 issues. And so they're, you know, cramming everything in, and everything in this issue feels really jumbled, and it feels like it's all supposed to just, it's okay, you can just take it for what it's worth, and it doesn't matter that it's all jumbled, because we have one hell of a final splash page for you that's going to throw you for a loop. Except it got spoiled, and I mean, I'm not going to spoil it here, but I saw this image and saw this, saw stories and articles written about this already. Like, well, what does this mean? Well, who the hell knows? We sure don't know, because we don't know any of the history that's happened between, you know, the what the Teen Titans was before Death Metal started, and this, and who know, and then, you know, once we get back to Teen Titans starting in March with Infinite Frontier, it's going to be backfilling. And then we'll start learning about, oh, things that happened at the Academy could possibly lead to this alternate future, which every time DC says it's a possible future that could happen, pretty much just figure it's an Elseworld story because it's never going to actually, you know, play out like this. But yeah, and then to have a quick word about the art, same problem I've had with the art. Like, Rafa is so much better than this. Like, what the heck happened? It's lazy. It's not good. The line work, the rendering, it's just, it's not good. It's the, some of the worst art I've ever seen him do. It's still, you know, decent. It's average. But again, I always, when I hear Rafa Sandoval rather is doing a book, I'm excited about that because normally his art's really great and I'm not excited about the art here at all. All right, let me move on to my next book. I'm going to talk about Commanders in Crisis, number 4. It's written by Steve Orlando, art by David Tinto. We have colors by Francesca Corotenuto and letters by Fabio Amelia. So this really kind of brings to a close the first volume, I guess you would say, of Commanders in Crisis. And for those that are not familiar with it at all, it's sort of like Steve Orlando's love letter to superhero comics. In that way, it's very similar to Crossover that Donnie Cates is doing. And they both draw inspirations from big, giant, you know, universe-destroying events like Crisis on Infinite Earths and such. But they're very, very different stories. Donnie's story is very meta. Steve's story is very kind of emotional and is very much about relationships that people have. And so the five main characters, they've all been the former presidents of their Earths, or the presidents of the United States on Earths that have been destroyed. And they've all been brought to the final Earth that still exists to try to keep the sepsis that's infecting the universe and destroying all these Earths from consuming this final Earth. And that's where the title comes from, right? Because they've all been commanders in chief, and it's basically a crisis that has destroyed all the Earths in this particular multiverse. There's one left, so that's where the Commanders in Crisis comes from. And it's Steve's given them really original and interesting powers, and where the book really shines is, like I said, in the relationships that the different commanders have, because as much as they're all sort of simpatico, you know, they've all been through the same sort of things. They've seen their Earths destroyed. They've all known the pressures and rigors and demands of being president. And it's not just that they were president, right? Like, you have one who's homosexual, so he was the first gay president. You have one who's an African-American woman. She was the first African-American woman president. You have another one who's Latino, so he was the first Latinx president. And then you have another one who's Pakistani. She's the first Pakistani-American president. So they all, it's not just that they know what it is to be president. They know what it is to be president and, you know, have a certain subset of the populace be against them because of what they represent, the diversity they represent. So, you know, I talked about it before about how so many comics that are coming out now are sort of pulling from the headlines. And I know Steve's been working on this for a long, long time, so far before the, you know, recent events. But what happens in the first issue is there are some forces that are working against good, if you will, and they basically infuse all the empathy that exists in the world into one particular normal everyday guy, and then they murder that guy. So technically what they've done is they've killed empathy. And God, you don't, if the society and our culture in the United States has taught me anything over the last 5 or 6 years, it's that we don't have enough empathy. I feel like that is so rooted in the problems that we have in, you know, day-to-day life, culturally and sociologically. There's not enough people that say, well, let me put myself in their shoes. Let me feel what they're feeling. Everybody's just wrapped up in their selfishness. So when that happened in the series, in issue 2, we learn about issue 1 ends with the guy being killed, or them discovering the guy's been killed. And then issue two, right at the beginning, we find out it's empathy that's been destroyed. It got real meta real fast, and I didn't necessarily expect that. So it's a really good story. And like I said, this sort of finishes up the first volume. And what I love about it, where this series really shines, like I said, is the relationships between the different commanders, because like I said, even though they have so many things in common, you know, having been president and their worlds having been destroyed, they're all very, very different. And just because they've all been through the same things and they're not now all in a similar position trying to save this earth doesn't mean that even they agree. And the fact that empathy doesn't exist on the world kind of, you know, affects their team as well. And they start kind of butting heads with each other. And then there's a big, big reveal in this issue that throws everything on its head. And you wonder if the commander's in crisis, if this team is even going to be able to continue, as working together as a group. They got to figure that out before they can even think about if they're going to be successful in saving this world from being destroyed by the kind of sepsis that's infecting the universe. So it's a really, really great story. David Tinto's art is really dynamic, and the colors are pretty bright and sort of suit the sort of classic superhero feel that Steve Orlando is giving the story. One thing I'll say is it is for mature readers. There is language and a little bit of nudity, so it's definitely not for kids, but it's pretty good. The first issue really grabbed me, and the second issue I was kind of like, it was sort of a letdown for me a little bit after the first issue. And then the third issue, it kind of ratcheted back up, and I'm like, okay, so the second issue was a little bit of setup. You know, we've talked about it a lot of times on the podcast. You need the peaks and valleys. You know, if you don't have the valleys, then it's hard to hit and have emotional impact on the narrative beats when they're up at the higher spot. And, you know, and like I said, three ratcheted it up, and then four, I mean, this one, the revelation we get in the back is you sort of see it coming a little bit. There's some clues and some Easter eggs. But when it hits, you're just like, oh man. And then the aftermath of that, I guess we'll see how it all plays out for issue five. So if you're not checking it out, I definitely recommend Commanders in Crisis. It's from Image. Steve Orlando, like I said, is the writer. It's his creator-owned book. So, all right, Jay, what do you have up last?
Yeah, it's Bloodshot. So real quick, I'm assuming this is just like a revamp of the story of Bloodshot. Is it starting over for the character? Because he's been around for a while, right? The Bloodshot?
Bloodshot, well, he was around in the 90s. And then when Valiant started back up in 2012, yeah, they brought him back, but it's a little bit of a different story now than it had been previously.
Okay. Like I said, I know who the Bloodshot was, but I never really picked up the book per se. So it was actually kind of fun to read. It's written by Tim Seeley, who I've met at Comic Cons, and he's actually a pretty cool guy. I love his work. He did Hack and Slash, of course, and then Revival. So I always like his writing style and his artwork. For this, the artist is Brett Booth and Pedro Andreo. Is that right? Andreo? I hope I'm saying his name right. I'm sorry. but like I said, first time I read the book, I kind of got thrown in there. I guess from the previous chapter 9, it's chapter 10 or number 10. Number 9, I guess he was trapped in like an alternate universe, I'm assuming. And he needs to get back to this Earth, I guess, trying to get back. So I guess we're introduced to a character that's been around before, I guess, Wilfred Wiggins. I guess he's the scientist that knows how to work with his nanos, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't read any Bloodshot since they started this most recent series.
Okay. It's not bad. Like I said, I know I just kind of got jumped into it, but it's actually not too bad. I mean, I feel like they're introducing the characters, the story, which is kind of neat. You also get to meet, I don't want to get way too much of the story, but he meets a scientist and he's going to help him, you know, try to get back to where he's stuck at, back to this reality. And he kind of gives him clues of what he has to do. So he figures that out. And I guess they're trying to stop another company that made him. I guess they're trying to revamp the industry to try to make more. So I guess that's their mission. It seems like I've seen this before in a couple of places, like at the old storyline. So yeah. I guess they're working together to, you know, stop this company from making more of him. And then I guess he meets I guess a girl that helps him. I guess she's been around before. They kind of just threw her in there.
Yeah, I'll go. I mean, like I said, I'm flipping through it now, and it's the only value book that I'm still buying, but yet I'm not reading it, just because it's at the bottom of my pile because
right
lost it.
Katrina, that's it, Katrina. So they bring her in the storyline. I've seen her before, so I guess they just reintroducing her the first time in this new storyline.
Yeah,
which is, I guess, is cool. I guess, but so they finally get the team together, and they're gonna go try to do this little, you know, mission and try to stop this corporation from making any more, I guess, Bloodshot characters. It wasn't bad. Like I said, it's I knew who the character was, but reading this, it kind of, the art was good. I like it, and the storyline's good. So if it's just like retelling the story, it's not it's pretty good so far. I would definitely go back and get the other issues to, you know, see how it started, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the big draw for me is, so this is my favorite Valiant character, and you're right, Tim Seeley is a good writer and Brett Booth's a good artist. So honestly don't know why I haven't picked this up, other than the fact that, you know, the quality of Valiant books has diminished since a lot of the really great, talented executive staff left. And so it's kind of bittersweet to go back and read it. But just flipping through, I'm see that Brett Booth Bloodshot art. It's like, maybe I do need to go and check it out.
Because I know you're a big fan. I was going to ask you, was artwork the same back in the, you know, back before, or was it better? Because it doesn't look too bad now, but I always heard that artwork was pretty good back when the first
came out. The artwork in the Jeff Lemire days when Miko Suyan and Louis LaRosa was drawing it, it's like some of the best comic art I've ever seen in my life. It's just ridiculously good. And it's quite a bit different here with the Brett Booth style. And the problem is that here, you know, it's Brett Booth and Pedro Andreo, as you're saying. Andreo's not credited as the inker. And anybody who's a Brett Booth fan will know that what you want to see is Brett Booth, Norm Ratman doing the inks, Andrew Dahlhaus on colors. And you do have Andrew Dahlhaus on colors here, but I don't know if they're just going straight from Brett's digital pencils to colors, because the artwork's just not quite as clean. And the thing I always love about Brett is just his page layouts. He's got the most dynamic panel layouts of anybody in the industry. But here, I don't know if they're asking him to rein it in, but we don't see. I mean, it's still recognizable as Brett Booth. You know, you're still getting panels that aren't all rectangles and squares, but it's not as dynamic as I've seen his panel layouts in the past. But yeah, I need to go back and read it too. I mean, like I said, I'm buying Bloodshot still, and I haven't read any of it. I read the Free Comic Book Day issue, which was the first Tim Seeley Bloodshot issue, and I interviewed Tim about it at San Diego Comic Con back when we still had conventions in 2019, but I haven't read any of it. I don't think Manny's read any of the new Bloodshot either.
I read the first issue, and I I'm such a fan of the Lemire run ever since the Valiant, this I can't blame necessarily on the new Valiant, but it's just not the same.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, what's your last book, Manny?
My last book is Future State Dark Detective number 1. And given all the time I've had, I should have already the creative team up, but I don't.
Well, Mariko Tamaki wrote it.
Thank you.
And I think Dan Mora.
For some reason, I have a ghostwriter up. I don't know why.
Yep. Dan Mora drew it. He's got art and cover by Dan Mora, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Aditya Bidikar.
Thank you. And then there's also a Future Past story by Matthew Rosenberg with art by Carmine Gian Domenico with colors by Antonio Fabella. That's going to be the grifter story in the back. So I don't really know what this is. Another one of those stories where I don't really know why we have it. You spent so much time telling us that Tim Fox is going to be the new Batman and, you know, this and that, whatever. And then here's a dark detective with Bruce Wayne in the future looking like he did in the past. I mean, he hasn't really aged or anything. Like, he still looks the same. And if Batman, if Bruce Wayne Batman is still in the picture, then that's still his Gotham.
Yeah, like, but keep in mind that just because Bruce Wayne's in Dark Detective, like, all the Future State books don't take place at the same time.
Well,
like, look at Swamp Thing. That's clearly not the same world as everywhere else.
But you have they mention that, you know, well, maybe it's right. This is before that, right?
I mean, who knows? That's the thing about it. They're just telling whatever story they want to tell. You can't, don't think about the timeline too much.
That's stupid.
You gotta judge each book on its own. Like, it doesn't connect to anything else.
But that's what makes it difficult, is that, so, okay, let's connect the dots. We have Tim Fox in one book as Batman,
right,
dealing with the magistrate. We have a Justice League book where it mentions that he saved Gotham. And now I'm reading a book where Bruce Wayne is still Batman, because the book claims that Batman is dead in the beginning. And you know, I'm like, and
you're thinking about, see, you're trying to reconcile something that happens in one book with something that happens in another.
Because they all say Future State in the beginning, and they all open with the same tagline.
Yeah. And it talks about how there's, you know, alternate futures, and they saved all the timelines and everything counts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this could, if it helps you think about this, think about them all just as different Earths.
That makes it worse. So the one thing I appreciate about this book, and it's because you don't get to see it that often, short sleeve bat suit.
You know what? great for those hot muggy nights when you just don't want to have those long sleeves.
So I mean, it was the story really is just him being chased, and that was, I'm not even sure.
Spoilers, man. Don't give it away.
Huh? I'm not giving it away. That's all it is. From the beginning, he's being chased. And then, and here's the one thing I don't like about broke Batman, is he's never actually broke. I don't know if you've noticed this, but he always have just enough money to do whatever he needs to do. He's never, every time they're like, oh yeah, he lost his money, he always has, in you know, some backup bunker with supplies. He always has just enough money to do something. And don't give me that. Don't give me that he's broke, because he's not. He has assets. Okay.
He's Batman. He plans for everything.
Yeah, I know. He diversifies. He invests.
That's right.
I think he gave it all to Fox and Batman line.
What you don't know is in issue 2 of Dark Detective, he goes and works his shift at the, what was the burger place called where they serve like the Joker fries?
shoot, I like that. That was good.
Yeah, see, he's got a shift at the Bat Burger place.
Either that or at the Justice League diner or whatever it was in. What was that? What was it in Wade's book, Kingdom Come?
Yeah, the Justice League like themed restaurant. Like, that's not Planet Hollywood or Hard Rock, but
yeah,
it's Justice League themed. Anyway,
it was boring and whatever. And then I find a whole lot more action in the second story.
Yeah, I figured like the second story
with Grifter. That was just cool. It was just fun. It was like a chase. It was like a big chase and everything. But all of them. And I think I noticed the more you mention it, the more the artwork starts to pop out. And it's like, oh yeah, it's not as good as
pop out, but not in a good way.
Yeah. So, what makes this book worse is that it's 2 full stories. So it's more expensive. And even the name of it, like, doesn't strike, oh, I need to buy this book. Once you just look at the title, look at the price, probably not picking this up.
Yeah. I mean, I think Dan Mora, his art here is closer to his regular art. You know, I didn't feel like as much of a letdown. I don't think it's his best work. But what's interesting, this is the one book where when you talk about Carmine DiGiandomenico, And most people will know his work previously from working on Flash with Joshua Williamson. And his art in Flash was a lot less solid, I'll say. It was a little more frenetic, which kind of suits a Flash title because, you know, you want it to be fluid and you want that sense of movement. So I didn't necessarily care for that style. So this is the one instance where the artists, their work here is better than the work I've seen them do in the past.
I like this.
Dijon Domenico's art on the Grifter story is really great. And it's Matthew Rosenberg clearly is a Grifter fan and has read Grifter. I'm not talking about Grifter in terms of, you know, the Wildstorm that Warren Ellis did or anything that's been done since DC bought Wildstorm. He knows Grifter from back in the Wildstorm days. It's clear that he's read like Team Seven and those kind of books because he nails the voice of Grifter and who Cole Cash is really, really well. So yeah, I actually like the Dark Detective story. It's one of the better stories so far that I've read in the first 2 weeks of Future State. But that being said, the Grifter story is better. It's just all around better. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to think when, you know, we're getting Mariko Tamaki on Detective because she has a track record of being inconsistent in my mind on the quality of her stories. And we know she's going to be taking over Detective Comics when Infinite Frontier comes around. So I was really worried, and maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's why I enjoyed the story, the first story more, because I was worried. And so my expectations were pretty much bottom of the barrel based on the last couple of issues of Wonder Woman. And so it was actually readable and I did enjoy it. So I'll give her a pass, but that's the thing. The two Batman books are the only books we're getting in Future State that actually have four issues. One of the Superman books has three. I think it's the Imperius Lex book has three. Everything else has two. And then next Batman and Dark Detective both have four. So
I wonder how a decision was made. It's like you get three books.
I don't know. I mean, you would think everything would get two except, I mean, we know why next Batman and Dark Detective got four issues because it's Batman.
So they can make the money.
Yeah, exactly. Paying the bills. I don't know why Imperius Lex got three. It is a little strange. So, all right. Well, let me go to my last book. It's written by the same writer that wrote the first book I talked about. It's written by Stephanie Phillips. We have art by Craig Semark. Colors are by John Kalish. Letters by Troy Pateri. It's A Man Among Ye, number four. And it finishes off of volume one, telling this fictionalized story of Anne Bonny, who was a real life pirate back in the day, one of the very few female pirates, and her partner, Mary Read, who also is a real person and one of the very few female pirates from back in the day. And, you know, Stephanie's dad is a history professor. She obviously has an interest in history as well. And like I said before, she's a really great writer, up and coming. And so I was really excited to read this. You know, it's coming from Top Cow, one of my favorite publishers. And with these strong female characters, Stephanie's giving them a really good voice. The artwork by Craig Semark is spot on. The colors are kind of bright, and it you know, it's not like dark and muddy. And, you know, when you tell sort of historical fiction, I think there's always that tendency to go like sepia tones and make everything kind of brownish and gray, and they avoid that temptation. And so it's very pleasant. The artwork's very pleasing to the eyes. It's not really dynamic, but again, it sort of suits the story that's being told because it is this, you know, historical tale set in the 1800s. And again, Stephanie's just a great writer to give voice to these strong female characters. And what happens here is a great twist, and we get a lot of plot threads that are left hanging, but also it's enough of a resolution that if the sales don't dictate, and I hope this is not the case, but if the sales don't dictate there being more of this, then you get a satisfying conclusion. However, if the sales do dictate, then we can get more, and you know, the plot threads here that are sort of left dangling can be explored further. So I just really, really enjoyed it. I felt like each issue got better and better, and this was the best issue yet. So it even, you know, as much as I enjoyed issues 1, 2, and 3, and so I was expecting to enjoy this, it even surpassed my expectations, and I ended up thinking, man, this was really great. And it's actually my book of the week. It's a favorite comic that I read this week. I think it's really that outstanding. So if you didn't pick up any of them, maybe you can still pick up all 4 issues from your comic shop, or ask them to order them for you, because I don't think any of them sold out, or the trade will be coming along at some point, I'm sure. And I know you were reading this too, Manny. Did you get a chance to check out issue 4?
Yeah, I did, actually. I thought it was that was great.
The twist at the end was crazy, huh?
This was good. I was like, oh snap. And then so oh man. So I can't talk about it, but the way that it's written, I thought was very true, and I think I want to tell you about it without telling you, and I think you know what I'm talking about, and and so I really liked it. I thought it was fun, but I did not like the fact that, yeah, I, by the end of it, I was like, oh, this is the last one. And I agree with you. I really want more adventures.
Yeah. And like I said, I think I'm pretty sure it was only solicited for 4. Maybe I'm wrong. And maybe it's 5, but.
No, at the end of it, it has the thank you letter and everything. And
yeah, but well, it has a thank you letter, but it also has at the end, it says on the last panel, it says to be continued. So that might have just been, you know, Stephanie's or the creative team saying, hey, we want to do more of this. So but yeah, I guess we'll see. So all right, well, let me go down the list of some other books that you might want to be on the lookout for today. In addition to Red Atlantis over at Aftershock, we have Lonely Receiver number 5, which Manny's been reading, so I guess he didn't get a chance to get to that one, didn't talk about it, but we have 7 Secrets number 6, excuse me, over at Boom from Tom Taylor. In addition to the books we talked about at DC, there's also a Future State Kara Zor-El Superwoman book, a Future State Superman Wonder Woman book, and a Sweet Tooth The Return number 3 of 6 from the Jeff Lemire miniseries over at Image. In addition to the books that we talked about, I want to mention that there is a second printing of Crossover number 2, if you missed out on that. There's also a third printing of Department of Truth number 1 and a second printing of Department of Truth number 2 and a second printing of Department of Truth number 3. So if you missed out on any of those, there are some, you know, subsequent printings, so you can pick one up if you missed it. And also Homesick Pilots number 2, which I haven't had a chance to read. We did cover the first issue, and was kind of a creepy horror book, so I definitely want to give that a try. Always got to give a series at least 2 issues. We didn't talk about any Marvel books. I got them really late. I did read Amazing Spider-Man number 57. I thought it was good. I thought I said that issue 56 was the best issue of Amazing Spider-Man that Nick Spencer had written, and I stand by that. I think 57 sort of starts building off of the seeds that Spencer planted in 56. So I think the future is bright for Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man. Let me rephrase that. The future is not bright for Spider-Man. He's in deep doo-doo right now. But for us fans, the future is bright because Amazing Spider-Man is getting really, really good. It's kind of been floundering for a while, I feel. So this is a welcome change. There's also from Marvel a Chris Claremont anniversary special. It's a Danny Moonstar story. You know, she first made her appearance in New Mutants. I'm not a Danny Moonstar fan at all. I did flip through it. The coolest thing about it is just seeing the art by guys like Bill Sienkiewicz and Brett Booth, who we talked about, doing some X-Men art kind of reminiscent of Jim Lee. But the story itself didn't, I mean, flipping through it, like I said, I'm not a Danny Moonstar fan. Nothing that I saw while I was flipping through it made me think, oh, I want to go back and read this. So I don't know. It's up to you. If you're a New Mutants or a Danny Moonstar fan, maybe you'll dig it. Immortal Hulk has issue 42 hitting stands. King in Black is continuing with a couple of crossovers here. We have Gwenom versus Carnage. We have Planet of the Symbiotes, and we have Thunderbolts. Over in the X-Men corner of the universe, Marauder 17 and Sword number 2. And then the Union number 2 miniseries is also a King in Black crossover. It's number 2 of 5. And I did read that first issue. I'm not sure if I talked about it on the show, but I did read the first one. I thought it was okay. But again, being that the Marvel books came in so late, I didn't get a chance to check it out. So other than that, I think that's it. I don't think there's anything else that that jumps out on at me. So those are some of the titles you may want to be on the lookout for when you hit up your comic shop this week. As always, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.